Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat Bulls Fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls. And the Bulls are going to be slotted six as we know right now. Just to recap, if you're not familiar with the lotto odds, the Bulls have a 5.3% chance of moving up to number one, a 6.0% chance of moving up to number two, 7% chance of moving up to number three, 44% chance of staying at number six, and a 33.1% chance of moving back to seven. That's right. Our odds of moving to seven are better than our odds of moving up to one, two, or three combined. And a 4.5% chance, nearly the same odds of moving up to number one, of actually moving back to number eight. And just a 0.1% chance of moving back to number nine. So it does look like overall the Bulls have roughly a 62% chance, a little bit better than that, of staying in one, two, three, or six. So I think probably our expectation right now when looking at the draft and looking at the lotto odds is to kind of go through and assume we'll be at six. And so looking at six, there's a lot of different players the Bulls might consider. And even if you drop down to seven, there's a lot of players we might consider. I've gotten a little bit of time to kind of go through the different guys. I've not spent a ton of time watching each prospect yet. I will spend some more time, you know, over the coming months, especially after the lottery in a few weeks when we know where the Bulls will land. Sadly, I'll actually probably be on a plane to India for work during the lottery, which would be sad for me since I love watching the lottery. I don't know. It's one of my fun things to watch, and I'll hate to miss it live. So maybe I'll be on one that has Wi-Fi and still get to watch it, or maybe my trip will get delayed and I'll still get to watch it. But anyway, on May 15th, we'll get to find out where the Bulls actually draft. So kind of going up through the different prospects right now, you got DeAndre Ayton presently listed at number one. I think he's really locked in to be the number one prospect in the draft. I think he's definitely got an extremely high ceiling in the NBA, a very good chance of being a potential superstar. Questions about his motor abound and things like that. But, you know, 20 points a game, a good defender, good rebounder, good scorer. You know, he really can do everything. A center, you know, maybe the next next Anthony Davis. We'll see how things go with DeAndre Ayton, but I think he's definitely going to go number one. And if the Bulls should get the number one pick, I certainly hope that they draft DeAndre Ayton. Number two right now, most people have focused on Luka Doncic, who's coming from the international draft crop. And, you know, watching Luka, I can't say that I've been amazingly impressed. I know his stats are just off the charts for his age, just incredible for his age playing in Europe. And so that's really impressive. But watching his game, I just question whether he has the athleticism to be an elite player in the NBA. I think he'll be a good player. He definitely has a lot of skills. He's well-rounded, can kind of do everything. But watching him get his shots off, it just reminds me of watching Adam Morrison in college, where he worked so hard for every shot he got. And he scored at this very elite level. But as soon as the athleticism kicked up like one notch, his game went down. And I just don't know that Luka Doncic has enough athleticism to be able to be a superstar. Now, there are definitely some examples of players who've been able to have high skill thresholds that have remained superstars. Steve Nash is one that comes to mind. I don't think anyone would mistake Nash as this amazing run jump athlete, but still had a superstar impact on his team. But, you know, Doncic also doesn't have, you know, I guess it depends. If he plays a shooting guard, he's got great size. If he moves to small forward, maybe not great size. I don't see many comparisons of guys like this. Maybe he's a Gordon Hayward, a little smaller than Hayward, maybe a Danilo Gallinari. You know, it's like when I try and think of, like, you know, guys who maybe aren't super athletic but are good creators and have that kind of size, I just don't find a lot of, like, amazing comparisons. So we'll see how things go with him. Three and four, I think, are settled in on Jaren Jackson Jr. and Marvin Bagley. Now, Bagley, I think, is interesting because he was number one to number two guy coming into this year. Really had a strong year. I mean, great scored, kind of does everything pretty well, prototypical power forward. You maybe wonder if his range will eventually get out to the NBA 3. I think you have to hope that it does, and maybe it doesn't right now. But, you know, really great player, high upside ceiling. And, you know, he's kind of staying at four. Jaren Jackson Jr. is interesting. Not nearly as prolific a year at college, but flashes all the potential of a guy who could be a potential superstar in the future. Also, the youngest guy in the draft, you know, just a little over 18 and a half right now, barely made the age requirement. So he maybe has a little bit more ceiling left in some of these other guys. As an example, Jaren Jackson Jr. is a full year younger than DeAndre Ayton, even though they both had, you know, just that 1 year of college basketball. So it will be interesting to see what happens with him. The thing that scares me a little bit watching Jaren Jackson Jr. And someone else, I'm Real GM, brought up this comparison, even though it sounds odd on the surface, but it made me think about it, was, you know, you looked at Lonzo Ball in college, and he had 41.2% three-point percentage on over five attempts per game. And just looking at that numerically, you'd think this guy's going to translate into an NBA shooter, but we all know that hasn't happened. And when you watch him, you're like, well, he's got this really, really kind of ugly shot. And so it's not surprising that that shot is difficult to hit consistently, but it's just that he did so on such great volume in college, you think there's no way it's not going to be consistent in the NBA. Jaren Jackson Jr., he has this shot where he doesn't bring the ball above his head. He's got a really low release point, and so he's not really going to take advantage of his height. And so in that sense, I'm a little worried that he's really going to be this dominant shooter in the NBA, because he's not going to be able to get a shot off super easily, you know, relative to his height. He's not going to just shoot over guys because he has this kind of weird release. And so it makes you wonder if he'll really be as effective. Now, unlike Lonzo Ball, Jaren Jackson Jr., 80% from the free throw line, which I think is a good measure to show like how consistent the guy's form is, how good of control he has. Lonzo Ball, 65.7%, I think, in college from the free throw line, kind of shows that, you know, really he's not controlling the ball quite as well in terms of his overall consistency of motion and everything else. So I do think Jaren Jackson Jr. probably will, you have his shot, stretch out and be very successful, but there are some things that concern me about there. Obviously has tremendous upside, great defender so far, good shot blocker, you know, really shows potential to do a lot of things. So we'll see what happens with him. Pretty low volume of shooting, though. I think he's maybe not as exciting after I've watched him on tape as I was when I read other people talking about him. And so we'll see where he ends up in the draft. But you do have to remember he's got probably really like one less year experience than a lot of these other guys, even though they're all freshmen. You know, he's really played basically a year less than all these other guys, just being younger than almost every guy in the class. He's more than a year younger than Michael Porter Jr., more than a year younger than Mo Bamba, more than a year younger than DeAndre Ayton, about a half year younger than Marvin Bagley, a year younger than Trae Young. So he's a year younger than all these guys. So he does have a little bit more development. If you think if this guy had another year of basketball, he would then be equal to these guys in terms of experience. And so that's something going for him. Trae Young and Michael Porter are the next couple guys who kind of fit to me. And maybe we could throw Mo Bamba into this group too, of guys who have like really good upside, but then like different questions. So Michael Porter Jr., he was number one or two in his class. And now he's sitting somewhere between sixth, seventh, who knows, in the draft order. And he had back surgery, missed the whole year, effectively. He played three games. He did come back at the end, which was nice to see him at least get on the court, even if he didn't play particularly well. A guy who previously drew comparisons to Kevin Durant, but you wonder if he's has the same level of athleticism, if he can really play small forward, or if he's going to be too small for a power forward, or how that's going to work out for Porter. I think it's going to be a tricky situation for him. I think everything with Porter is going to depend on what his workout look like and what his medical information he shares with teams look like. That's going to be the entire basis for judging him. It's really not much us as fans can do to judge him. You know, I compare it to Marvin Bagley. Bagley had a great year, and he's dropped from basically being tied with Porter in the pre-draft rankings to being number three or four in this draft. And so to think Porter, who had back surgery and now has long-term health concerns and then also didn't play, and we don't know if he'd have had a good year or what would have happened with him, to think that he should be right around the same range is a little dicey to me. So he's definitely a guy, you're swinging for the fences if you take him. You definitely have to believe in whatever you saw in the workouts if you take him. Trae Young, a guy who shot the ball all over the place, put up a ton of points, ton of assists, also a ton of turnovers and kind of dicey percentages. You know, obviously the defense is keyed in on him. You kind of wonder if he goes to the NBA and has to face defenses that key in on him, how that's going to go, which makes me wonder, does this guy really have star upside for you or not? I think people are talking about Stephen Curry when they talk about Trae Young comparisons, but it's maybe a little difficult for me to see that at this point. Granted, he did play a tougher schedule than Curry in college, so it makes sense that Curry had maybe a little bit easier of time shooting threes, facing lesser defenses, but I still just kind of wonder like how well Trae Young is going to translate. I think there's a lot of question marks, and so he also becomes a guy that you really don't know exactly what you're going to get. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise, I think, anyone if Trae Young ended up being a bust. I mean, I get why he could also end up being a great player, but you could easily see, like, well, he's not quite big enough, doesn't get his shot off well enough, and then now he's just like an okay player. Maybe bust is a strong word. I mean, I think we expect Trae Young to at least be a good shooter in college and be a in the NBA, be a good shooter and be like a backup point guard who can fill up the box sheet from you occasionally. You know, maybe a CJ McCollum type or something like that in his like worst case scenario. Mo Bamba, then, I think he's a guy who, to me, kind of looks like, say, DeAndre Jordan coming into this thing. A guy who's, you know, tremendous length, great height, decent athleticism. I don't know if he's got amazing athleticism, but he's going to be able to just complete a lot of lobs for you. He's going to put a lot of pressure on defenses with his height. He's a guy who could guard some of the other elite big men in the league, if you know, like Anthony Davis and other guys like that, who's going to be able to anchor your defense, probably a tremendous help defender. Clearly a guy who could just slot in and be great for probably any team at the center position. The question is, how much does his offense improve? Is he a guy who can become a very strong offensive player for you as well, or is he a guy who just gets you offensive rebound dunks and maybe a couple post-ups a game? You know, he does seem to have the formations of a good mid-range shot. His form is pretty good. You know, who knows? I mean, this is a guy whose shot maybe extends out further in the NBA and becomes a quality shooter. If that happens, and maybe he becomes a solid player, is he a guy who can really take people all over the place and just score like Anthony Davis? Seems pretty far away from that right now, but it will be interesting to see where he develops. And I think from this perspective, I look at him as maybe his upside being something like DeAndre Jordan, except with a good mid-range jump shot. And, you know, that's a really solid player, a guy maybe who could score 15 a game, who can be an offensive threat for you, and then can really, like, anchor a defense for you as well, and can make a lot of impact from that perspective. And so a guy who's sort of a safety, but then also has some decent upside if things go well, but is definitely going to do one thing you really need and every team really needs, which is protect the paint and be a great defensive center for you. Then you come into the guys who I feel are the safe guys. You got Wendell Carter and Mikal Bridges. These two guys, to me, are guys who are going to be slotted in and be great players in the NBA. Wendell Carter, I like to use an Al Horford-type comparison. He's a guy who doesn't have a lot of vertical to his game, but he's got a good amount of skills. He's got a good jump shot. He's a good defender. He can block shots. You know, he can do a lot of different things. But he's just not a guy who seems to project into an elite playmaker. And so, you know, he's a guy you would love to add onto your team if he became Al Horford and you drafted him. I don't think you'd be upset with that. You know, as a guy who's a low-rung all-star a couple times, I think you'd be pretty happy to have that guy on your team for a long period of time. But just probably doesn't have the perceived upside of some of these other guys. Mikal Bridges, to me, I tend to think Luol Deng, except with a three-point shot. And that sounds like awfully good to me, but probably still doesn't have like the ability to create his shot off the dribble. And a guy who could probably fit in, though, to any team, because he'll get his points without, you know, requiring lots of touches. You're not going to need him to have the ball in his hands all the time. But he's a guy who can do a bit of everything, will be really strong defensively, and can do all kinds of stuff for you. So those are kind of the prospects. That's what I think of them, at least at this exact moment in time. You know, I'll probably dial in and look more closely at the guys I think the Bulls are really looking at as soon as the lottery results are drawn, and I can narrow it down to, say, like three or four guys, and then I'll probably pick an official favorite. Right now, I'm not really sure whom I want the Bulls to pick, and obviously that'll be very different if they're 1, 2, 3, or 6. If they're 7, I think it gets interesting because of the guys who sort of have this higher ceiling, quote-unquote. There's 7 of those guys, but if you get the one at 7 and you don't like that guy, then all of a sudden taking Wendell Carter or Mikal Bridges starts to make a lot more sense if you're not a believer of one of those ceiling guys that end up falling to you. So we'll see what happens with the Bulls from that perspective. And so, you know, looking then at what's going on, you know, there, I want to start talking about the future lotto odds and the tanking versus winning next season debate. And I think in some ways, maybe the two sides of tanking another season versus winning, we can kind of maybe agree on this one thing. And that one thing is, look, you got a lot of young prospects. Don't spend any money in free agency this year. Just let your young guys play. Don't bring in any veterans unless for whatever reason you can get LeBron James, and sure, go ahead, or Paul George, go ahead. But otherwise, just don't bring in any veterans. Don't bring anyone to compete. Let these young guys play. Let them see who wins the positions. And then if you win games, you win games and try and make the playoffs with these guys. And if you can't win games, then you end up in the lottery with a lotto pick. And I think that is my view right now. Now, I think they're going to win enough games that they'll be competing for the playoffs at the end of the season. And I think that's fine. I'm content with that. The other thing is, it used to be kind of like a death knell if you ended up in this like 38, 35 win range. And I think that's really going to change for a couple different reasons. And so the first reason, of course, is that the lottery odds are going to change. Now, it's not to say if you are ninth that you have better odds of being the top pick than if you're first. You don't. But now the big thing is the top four slots are going to be drawn through the lottery, not three, but four. And if you're the worst team in the league, you have a 48% chance of picking fifth. I mean, almost 50-50 whether you're going to pick fifth or anything above fifth. And then the teams two and three, they have the same odds as you do at picking first, second, third, or fourth. And then their odds, their 48% of the leftover, will then range between fifth and sixth or fifth, sixth, and seventh for, you know, the second and third place teams, respectively. Now, the team that picks ninth next year will actually have, or I should say is slotted ninth, will actually have over a 20% chance of moving up into the top four, which is more than our chance right now being tied for sixth and seventh. So I think in the future, obviously, if you're slotted ninth, your odds are you'll still get the ninth pick. But your odds of moving up will be much, much higher. And the odds of someone moving up will be much, much higher. And so now the odds of, you know, you being the worst two, three teams in the league of getting this great pick are much less. The other thing worth noting about the draft is there's a huge drop off between the one pick and the rest of the picks. And that's only because there are years where you got a LeBron James in the draft, you just know this guy is going to be a superstar. And so then that guy becomes a superstar and is great. But the years where there isn't a guy like that, there actually is very little difference between the first and five picks. You know, if you look at some of the superstars in the league right now, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Chris Paul, these were guys, Kevin Durant, guys who were not picked number one. Kevin Durant was number two. Chris Paul was number four. I think Russell Westbrook was four. I think James Harden was five. Stephen Curry was seven. LeBron James, obviously number one. Anthony Davis, obviously number one. So you still have these guys who are number ones who are great. But there's a lot of guys who are, you know, really great players who are not picked number one. And they're kind of like a little sprinkled into the top of the draft. And what it comes down to is you have a lot of guys who are really, really good. They all have some flaws. You don't know which of them will fix the flaws. Some do, and then they go on to become superstars, and some don't, and then they don't become stars. And so it's difficult to tell. So, you know, there still is some value to being, you know, in the bottom few teams and like kind of giving yourself a very high chance at like the, you know, a top five pick still has a lot more value. There starts to become a drop off between, you know, six, seven, eight, nine, you know, in general. Like it does seem to be there's usually a tier of guys who are kind of like, these are the guys who have the highest ceilings now, but there still are guys. Jimmy Butler, you know, went to 30. Donovan Mitchell this past year, I think it was 13. You know, Paul George, I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it was like 9 or 10, somewhere around there. So you definitely still do see a lot of guys like greater in the draft who become, or later in the draft rather, that become great players. So it isn't something where you're guaranteed. But I do think a couple other things besides the changing of the odds, which will now make it easier for teams in the back of the draft to move up, is with the one and done rule effectively potentially going away in 2020, which should be an amazing class if they actually get rid of the one and done rule, because they'll have all the guys who had to play 1 year from the 19 high school class, plus all the elite prospects in the 20 high school class, all going out in 1 year. But with high schoolers back in the draft, all of a sudden it creates a lot more randomness to the distribution. Guys move around a lot by playing 1 year in college. And so guys you thought were going to be really great end up not being really great. And they move far back. And so now when you have to weigh this risk of like how good a guy is, it becomes a little bit all over the board where you're going to take guys. The guy who's played 1 year in college versus the guy who didn't play a year in college. So it does become a big risk for you. And what that means effectively as there becomes less clarity as to who is good and who's not good, the value of the higher picks becomes less and less because guys who were going to be super great end up not being super great after a year of college. DeAndre Ayton wasn't viewed as a number one prospect. If he was able to come out as a high schooler and his whole high school class came out, probably Bagley and Porter would have been the first couple guys taken. And then a guy like Ayton may have ended up sliding to like eighth or ninth, depending on who else was coming out of college and how things went. You know, a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr., who at the start of the year, I think was like in like the 15 range, may have been available at like 20 or something. So it starts to add a lot of randomness to what happens. It gives teams that are farther back in the draft a much higher chance of getting a good player, and it makes, if people take gambles on these high school guys, it makes it far more likely that they're going to get a bust, and which will then push the players who are really good that played a year or two in college back further in the draft for the teams that are further up. So even though people tend to feel like it's a death knell for the Bulls to be sitting here at like 30-ish wins in the future, it really isn't. I mean, it really isn't. This is going to be something where that model everyone wants to copy, that 76ers model of like just stay in the lottery until you get a couple of superstars, I don't think that that's a model that's going to work out really well over the future. It's going to be very difficult to get the same type of picks that the 76ers got. They also pulled off some great trades, which teams aren't making, to get some extra picks that were like very high up in the draft. They even screwed up a bunch of their lotto selections. So they were very aggressive about moving out of those when they screwed them up, which I think was great for them. But it's going to be very difficult to pull off that model in the future. And actually, I think what you're going to see is they're going to see more teams that are in this like 30-ish win area. It's going to be much easier for them to move up one. Even though they have ninth slot in the draft, you're going to see that like 8th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. You're going to see those teams move up with some regularity now. So you're going to see teams that are already good getting elite prospects. And then two, the ability for a guy to fall to you is going to be much higher. So it's going to be much more difficult to improve from being very bad. And it's going to be much easier to improve by being one of these treadmill teams if you have good management. And so good management is really going to become the key to the future of the NBA. And that's kind of true today, too. And so that may be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on what you think of the Bulls management. For me, I tend to think it's a good thing. I know a lot of you out there not fans of the Bulls management, and I understand it. I get where you're coming from, even though I disagree. But it will be what really drives things in the end, is how good you are at finding talent and making the right decisions in the draft, because you're going to have to do so with less information than ever before. And so looking into what the Bulls should do in free agency this year, as I discussed, don't really make any moves. Try them with your young guys. If some superstar, for whatever reason, decides he wants to come here, great, but it's not going to happen. And so just see if your young guys can win, and hopefully you do that. And then next year, you hope you're good enough that Klay Thompson, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, I know some people are dicey about him, one of those guys will come play with you. For me, even though I'd be a little scared of Jimmy Butler on a four-year deal starting next year when he's like 30, I would still take him and give it a shot, because if you have a chance to get a top 10 guy, I think you just do it. And then you see how things go, especially if the Bulls are progressing. Now, if they're only at like 30 wins, then maybe I don't do that. But if they're at like 40, 42 wins and they're like a playoff team, which is kind of what I think they'll be, then I think you add a guy like Jimmy Butler, you got a lot of young talent around him, and you figure out how to make it work. And I think that's a pretty exciting future for the team. He'd probably still be third in my list of those guys. I would take Thompson and Leonard first, and it will be interesting to see how that shakes out. And so I want to talk a little bit, I won't spend too much time, but a little bit talking about the NBA playoffs this year. I don't know how much you guys have been watching. I've watched, not a ton, but I've watched a decent amount of the NBA playoffs, and it's enjoyable. I love playoff basketball. I'm recording in the morning yet, so the Cavs and the Pacers game hasn't happened yet. I'm going to wait to see how that turns out, but it will be really interesting. This game has huge ramifications, because if the Cavs lose in the first round, you almost have to think LeBron is gone no matter what, right? They don't have a lot of room to improve or do anything. You have to think this guy is just going to bail and go somewhere else. And if he does, there's actually very limited opportunity. But one interesting opportunity is Philadelphia 76ers. Now, they're going to play Boston in the next round. And first, hats off to Boston for winning without their two best players. I used to think like Boston was a team that didn't really scare me in the future, but I got to say, Boston is actually built in a model that I'm hoping the Bulls build their team. Like, they got a lot of really good pieces, but they also then have a star, and then maybe Gordon Hayward's another guy sort of like a star. I mean, and they're missing potentially their two best players. I think both of those guys' injuries are things that they should recover from and should remain great players. And they won a round in the playoffs. Like, that team seems like they'll be really, really good in another year if everyone can come back healthy and they can stay healthy. But anyway, this year they're going to play Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia is going to beat Boston, which is going to put Philadelphia in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then they're going to play either Indiana, or they're going to play Cleveland, who, if one of those teams wins. Or now my mind is completely blanking on... Or Toronto, yeah, Toronto. And so when I look at that group that they're going to play, if they beat Boston, I think they could beat any of those teams too. I mean, I think the Philadelphia 76ers might be the odds-on favorite to make it to the finals. Now, they're going to get destroyed by whomever comes out of the West unless something crazy happens. But if you're the 76ers and you make it to the finals and you're LeBron James and your team just got kicked out of the first round and Philadelphia has max cap room, like, where do you go? I mean, like, you have to stay in the East, right? I mean, like, maybe if you could go to Houston, which I've discussed before, there's really, like, no way this can happen unless Cleveland makes a stupid trade to allow it to happen. Sorry, right? Maybe you try that. But if you can't go to Houston, then, I mean, are you really going to go to L.A.? And even if Paul George goes with you, and it's you and George and the L.A. guys, you really think you're going to compete with both the Rockets and the Golden State Warriors and have to play through both those teams in the playoffs to get to the finals? Like, that's just brutal. Like, why would you put yourself through that? You could go and join the team that just made the finals and has no competition in the East. I mean, that seems like the no-brainer move for me. But now the interesting thing is, if you're Philadelphia and you just made the finals and you're debating whether to add LeBron James. Now, this is crazy that anyone would actually even debate about, should I add LeBron James? But Ben Simmons and LeBron James are kind of basically playing the same position the same way, and you're going to destroy Ben Simmons' development, I think, if you bring in LeBron James, and it'll be weird trying to get these guys to play together. I mean, I think you have to do it, don't you? I mean, you have to add LeBron if you can, talent-wise, so you have a chance to compete with these other teams, even if the fit isn't super great. But now, if I'm the 76ers, do I actually pursue Paul George, who's like a younger guy than James, has way, way, way less miles on him, and could maybe stay for longer and be a contributor for more years at a high level, and also maybe would play in a role that's more complementary to my guys? I mean, that's like a really weird debate. I mean, it's interesting to see how that would go, but I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. I would not shock me if Philadelphia decided not to hard pursue LeBron James and went after Paul George instead. I mean, it wouldn't completely shock me. So I think that's going to be a really interesting thing to see how it fits. I mean, it will be crazy. But Philadelphia, if they're able to have one of these guys, they're really going to be a great team for a long period of time if their guys can stay healthy. Now, I mean, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid both have considerably higher injury risk, but I think that's just going to be a fascinating offseason to see where some of these big people go. The other thing that's, I think, really fascinating for me, and I think just really great the way it turned out, is the Pelicans barely making the playoffs, Nikola Mirotic clearly being a difference maker. They clearly made it because they traded for him, and you know, he got them into the first round. And then once they got there, they won a round. They just swept their way through the first round. And now they're in the second round of the Western Conference playoffs, and they're going to probably get killed by the Warriors. You know, they got destroyed game one. I don't think they're going to go very far. But this is a team that went from lottery to winning a round in the playoffs because they traded a pick that ends up being number 22 in the draft. And so teams have been holding on to like first round picks, like they're their firstborn children this year. And so the team that actually took a chance and traded a pick actually got a really nice reward for doing so. And so I'm kind of happy about that. I think it will help make the NBA a little more exciting if teams figure like, wow, you know what? Like, you actually can get some pretty good value out of trading for a pick. And from the Pelicans perspective, they also dumped a bad contract. I mean, this was a terrible trade from a historical perspective that the Bulls got this first round pick. They traded a good player, took back a bad contract, and only got a mid first rounder. But it was easily the best thing that was available on the market. I mean, crazy how poor the market was for picks this year. Maybe that's just the strength of this class as well. But it was a, you know, really ended up being a good trade for the Pelicans. I think it's still the best trade the Bulls could have done. So a nice move for them as well. And it worked out really well for both teams. I think from the Pelicans perspective, besides exciting me for opening up the league to maybe these types of deals, is that now they wonder, like, what are we going to do with DeMarcus Cousins? Tore his Achilles. Yeah, I mean, I think before this guy was like Isaiah Thomas. He was waiting for the Brinks truck to back up and send the money over to him. And he's now going to enter free agency like with very few suitors and not a whole lot of options. And I think the interesting thing is somebody's saying, well, just sign him to a short-term deal. But like, why do you do that? Like, he's probably not going to be good next year recovering from the Achilles in year one. So you really need to gamble on him if you believe in him, like a little bit longer term to get the payoff. Otherwise, you just paid a whole ton of money for a guy who's still just working his way through recovery for a year. So I think that's like a really dicey thing. And I would never, as a huge DeMarcus Cousins fan, and after tearing an Achilles, I'm still not. I will say his game is like sort of ground bound. Like he's not like a huge flyer or anything, so he doesn't need massive athleticism. He's really a high skill threshold player, but the Achilles will make his defense even worse than it's been, which is not great historically anyway. And it'll be interesting to see how that shapes out. And I wonder really what's going to happen with him. I think you might be able to get quite a deal if you go after DeMarcus Cousins. And if you want to be the all-injury risk team, it'd be interesting to see if you could sign Isaiah Thomas and DeMarcus Cousins, two guys who a year ago were viewed as superstars. If you could sign them both to like long-term deals, but like at discounted prices. Like if you could put in like $30 million a year total and get both guys for 5 years each, and then one or two of them panned out to return to their form previously, it would be like a really great way to have things work out. That said, I don't think I would take the chance on either guy. Thomas, to me, always looked like a mirage. The dude carried the ball every time he dribbled, which I just feel like wasn't a sustainable thing to continue to pull off in the NBA. And DeMarcus Cousins, I think, just never has impacted winning. His defense is too poor. I just don't see him being a great, really great fit or a great impact player. So I'm not really a fan of that, but I just think it's like intriguing how that might work out. Some teams are obviously going to take a chance on those guys, and if they pay out, there's like a pretty high upside to those chances being taken. So it'll be interesting, but I'm not really rooting for the Bulls to be one of those teams. I don't think it's a good value proposition. Anyway, that's probably it for the basketball portion of the show, but I would like to extend an invitation to all of you out there listening to the podcast. Come to my house for the NBA draft party. I host it, and this will be, I think, the 13th annual NBA draft party that I host. Usually we're around 20 guys hanging out in my basement watching the NBA draft. There's pizza, there's beer, there's chips, there's other stuff. I ask anyone who comes, you bring $5, or you bring an appetizer, or you bring some beer, or you bring some soda, just something, just to contribute. Everyone contribute a little bit, then it becomes a nice deal for everyone. But it's a tremendous night. It's one of my favorite nights of the whole year, just a ton of fun. It doesn't matter if you don't know anyone who's going to be there, because no one really knows anyone. I mean, I know some of the guys who've been coming for years now, but there's always like probably like 5 to 10 new people. Everyone immediately gets along really well, because you've got all this camaraderie about the Bulls. You have an immediate thing to talk about. So it's just a very loud, ruckus, fun night of complete basketball geeking out. I live up in Roselle, kind of near the 390 Expressway, which is the Elgin O'Hare and Roselle Road, like right around that interchange. Actually, like on the Schaumburg side, very close to Schaumburg. So if you can make it, that would be great. I can pick up some people from the train if you want to, come from the city and you want to take the train. Typically, there's no guarantees, but typically there are people who drive in from the city who will be willing to carpool and drive people back and other stuff like that, or I can drop you the train. So encourage you, if you're interested, to hit me up, DougTonis@comcast.net. You can email me there, or you can reply to me at Twitter and send me your email that way, and I will reply back to you, add you onto the list. Great fun night. So if you can make it, I would love to meet all of you. Anyway, that will do it for this edition of the Bulls Beat. As I noted earlier in the show, I'm going to be traveling to India for work probably sometime in the next few weeks. So I might not have a podcast in there that time period, depending on how things go. It will probably get one more Big Red Bus in with C-Red Fred today, maybe next week as well. Probably won't get another podcast on the Bulls Beat until after the NBA lottery, because I don't know that there's that much to cover until that happens, and we can really narrow down on the picks. So that'll be around when you can listen to me next, and I will talk to you guys then.